You're listening to a 95BFM podcast.
Our regular fortnightly segment with our Action Station is back. Trishul speaks to Protect Putiki about their recent petition calling for the Auckland Council to instigate a review of the resource consent for the marina at Putiki Bay. I will pass it over to him. Here's Trishul now.
Firstly, I just want to ask, what is Protect Putiki and what are you guys hoping to achieve with your petitions?
Well, Protect Putiki is a movement, I guess. It sort of evolved. So at the beginning, when the developer came to Putiki last year, and a group of the community, as well as some people from Ngāti Power, opposed it on the water, like they got in their kayaks and they swam, stuff like that, to make it difficult, I guess, for the developer to come in that day. And on the same day, a group of Ngāti Power set up an occupation on the beach and in the nearby little park. And initially, they were like Protect Kennedy Point. They were an occupation of Ngāti Power, but like their aim was to protect Kennedy Point. And then somebody said, what's the name for Kennedy Point? And they said, Putiki. It's all in Putiki. And I grew up on Waiheke and I lived there almost all my life and overlooking Putiki until 2 years ago. And so I'd actually moved up north when the occupation started. Anyway, so they decided to call it Protect Putiki at that stage online on the media. But also what happened then was that some Ngāti Power people left the occupation and went on to take direct action. So in effect, there were two groups formed. And I think the people still on the beach were the occupiers, and Protect Putiki became sort of a group of Ngāti Power plus community, plus people from all over New Zealand on socials, whose aim was to stop the marina and to protect Putiki Bay. So Protect Putiki is, I guess, a movement which primarily protects Putiki Bay. And I guess it's not quite a community movement. It's a national movement, but the focus is from a Māori perspective, at least in its inception.
And what are you guys hoping for in terms of talks with local government and central government? What's that looked like?
Well, we have been talking to DOC. We've sent a lot of letters to various ministers. So as far as talking to central government goes, we haven't had a lot of success other than that. When Kitty Allen was the Minister of Conservation, she finally came to Waiheke and had a public meeting with us, which was heavily dominated by people who didn't want the marina, I'd have to say. I think DOC was surprised maybe how many people don't want the marina, or was packed with people that didn't want the marina. I guess we've had that conversation. We do have a petition. The petition was started still as part of the occupation, so I see it as a petition which is a voice of Ngāti Power in a way. So it was when Protect Putiki, as part of the occupation, was speaking as Ngāti Power, but after the separation, Protect Putiki, although it had Ngāti Power people in it, wasn't speaking solely as Ngāti Power. It was a variety of people speaking. So in terms of speaking to central government, that petition is strongly Ngāti Power focused, and it's strongly about the loss of rights that Ngāti Power suffered as a result of colonisation, I guess, and the fact that Ngāti Power is still not being listened to. And I think when you have lived in a place for a long time and you have Māori blood, you feel like you're a kaitiaki, and I also have Ngāti Power blood. So from a Ngāti Power perspective, the marina has been given consent without the proper notification of all Ngāti Power. And I think that's where the petition comes from. And not only that, but Ngāti Power lost all land on Waiheke. So it's like they were made voiceless by that. And I think the fact that the marina went ahead without properly consulting them, one iwi trust was consulted, but there were others that weren't consulted. And I think the fact that the marina went ahead without that means that Ngāti Power continued to feel disenfranchised by the Crown, by Auckland Council, etc. And you asked me about the petition before, and we haven't delivered it yet because, first of all, Ngāti Power would have to combine with Protect Putiki, and both of us have ongoing legal things with the court. So a government won't accept a petition while that's going on. And the other thing is we could be giving it to Auckland Council at this time, but we haven't progressed that. So I've got off track with your questions, but anyway, that's where the petition stands at the moment. It's sort of on hold a little bit, waiting for some sort of feedback from the court about whether court cases will be going ahead or not.
And from what you would be able to talk about in that stage? How long do you think that process could take?
It could take ages, or it could be a shorter time. The Ngāti Power Trust Board has an appeal with the Court of Appeal that they're asking for. So you have to ask to be able to appeal. As far as I know, their appeal hasn't been granted yet, although I could be wrong about that because I haven't talked to them recently. And Protect Putiki was also asking for an appeal with the Court of Appeal. And that I do know that we haven't heard back from them about whether we'll be allowed to proceed with that. So if we weren't allowed, if neither of us were allowed to proceed, it could be that we could take action on the petition sooner. But if one or other of us is allowed to proceed, I doubt if we'll be able to present the petition for quite a while, because it takes ages sometimes to, once you're allowed to appeal, to for your appeal to be heard. So it could be up to 6 months or a year even for that. But if they tell us that we're not allowed to proceed, then it sort of opens the door relatively quickly.
And do you feel like there's been enough media coverage for Protect Putiki?
I think initially at the beginning there was a lot of coverage because obviously we were running around. Well, when I say we, not me, because I'm not on the ground there. I would go back about once a month. But everybody was working so hard to take direct action to try and stop the marina, and there was a lot of press coverage because of that. In November last year, the marina developer issued an injunction. They were granted an injunction by the court, and that process was ex parte, so Protect Putiki didn't have a chance at the time of granting of the injunction to legally fight it in court. And because of that injunction, people from Protect Putiki were no longer allowed to take direct action in the bay, and they are currently faced with an excess of $760,000 worth of costs to do with trying to protect the bay. And we also had criminal charges from, as you would imagine, a lot of trespass charges and some other charges as well. Some of those have been dropped. We had an assault charge against one woman. They were dropped, and instead the security guards were charged with assault of another person. So things like that, it's sort of a fluid thing with criminal and civil charges. So I guess where Protect Putiki is now is largely to do with, we have observers in the bay who go down every day and try and observe what the developer is doing. They're romping along because of the injunction being in place. So we're allowed to observe, and we do. We observe whether penguins are getting a good deal. And there are things like the other day, earlier this year, four penguin burrows were removed. At that stage, Forest and Bird were going to take an injunction as well against the marina, but they backed out of it. But under the Wildlife Act, it says that you're not supposed to touch the nests of wild animals, and the marina developer maintained that where the penguins lived wasn't their nest, it was just a burrow. So they were allowed to do what they wanted, basically, and Doc let them do that. Doc said that they felt it would be better for the penguins. The developer proceeded the way they wanted to because it would be monitored, and the developer had a penguin pen, but we maintain that wrecking an animal's nest, which they said was just a burrow, isn't really okay according to the Wildlife Act. Anyway, that happened. So the developer has been going gung-ho since they were allowed to do that. And the other day they were doing things like using impact drills within a metre or so of a penguin burrow, which did have a penguin in and was definitely a nest as it was breeding. But they're still allowed to do it. So the developer is basically just doing what they want. We're watching them. And at the same time, we're also trying to fundraise for various legal court cases. Again, I forgot what your question was. Just had a little ramble there.
No, it's all good. It's actually very interesting to just learn more about how the developers are just ignoring wildlife concerns. And why do you think they aren't being challenged on it?
I think we have tried to challenge them and failed. Every time you do a challenge, it takes quite a lot of energy out of you. So what we're currently doing is taking photos, videoing, trying to see where they have failed to follow the correct consent. One of our people is also I do a little bit myself, but I'm not on the island, so I try not to, because I'd always be speaking secondhand. But one of our people, or a couple of them, are trying to keep in touch with Doc and say, listen, the developer's just done that. But what usually happens when we say that is that Doc will then say, well, we're comfortable with what they're doing. And so that's also very discouraging for our, from our point of view. And we definitely feel that the penguins are suffering. I guess we have a major problem with Doc in that we felt they should have submitted against the marina right at the beginning when it was first notified, and they chose not to. They said they didn't even know of it. I think that's what they've said, although the developer said that they did send them the fact that they were going to be, they notified them that they were going to be doing the marina. So we're disappointed with Doc. Forest and Bird tried to help. But again, for Forest and Bird, it's not, to me, such a big deal if they chose not to proceed, because for them, if they failed, they'd face costs. I think that was one of the reasons they decided not to proceed. They didn't think they had enough grounds, because the injunction would have been to stop the developer doing something, but the developer had already started, so they couldn't really get a window of opportunity to stop them properly. And then that would have been a big deal, because the developer was saying they were going to lose, you know, hundreds of thousands of dollars a week for the time that they were stopped. I don't blame Forest and Bird on account of that's just an organisation, you know, set up for nature. But I do blame the Department of Conservation, because it's their role to administer the Hauraki Gulf. And the Hauraki Gulf is currently in a crisis situation of species loss, you know, the habitat degradation. And it's in a worrying state, and yet the Conservation Department is focusing on its islands, but not on the water that surrounds them. But it is actually part of their responsibility, and they chose not to do it. My hope is that they will never allow a marina on an offshore island of the Gulf again.
What's the future timeline for the movement? What are you guys hoping to achieve in the end?
I guess our aim was just to protect Pūtake, exactly what it says, and we felt the marina was going to damage it, and we still feel that strongly. As far as things go, when you're one group, even if we have a large media following or online social media following, when you're just one group and you're against Auckland Council, we're actually against Auckland Council. Ngāti Pāua Iwi Trust hasn't, they're not exactly against us, but they gave permission for the marina to the developer initially. So there's Auckland Council, there's them, there's most of the government not helping us. And also, I guess, so we're a small group trying to still keep going. And we're actually hoping to have a meeting soon to regroup and see exactly in which direction we can go. I think a large part of our focus has to be on various legal things which are still in the pipeline, and protecting the protectors is also a big thing. By being down there and observing the korora, we are hoping to, I guess there's a belief in our observers that when they're down there with their cameras taking videos and taking photos, it causes the developer to be better than they otherwise would be. So we're sort of trying to protect the korora in that way. And I think we have to keep going, because we need to keep fundraising for the people who have charges, as well as for any court action which we might have to take should our appeal to the appeal court. Should we be allowed to do that, then we'll have to pay for that as well. So fundraising is quite a big thing. But also I think just being there and saying, actually, we don't agree with this. You know, we don't agree from a Māori perspective, we don't agree with it from an environmental perspective. And actually those things really overlap. We don't agree with it as kaitiaki for those who are of us as Ngāti Pāua. You know, someone needs to keep saying that, even if they keep doing that. We will never agree with it, and we think it's wrong. Everything that's happened is wrong.
And thank you so much, Catherine, for coming in and talking about the movement and everything that's wrapped around in it. It's been very interesting to learn more about.
Well, I'm really hoping that as far as the petition goes, that Ngāti Pāua and Protect Pūtake will work out a really good way to present that to the government when we have the opportunity. And I guess in a little while we'll also probably be working at presenting it to Auckland Council, hopefully all of us combined, because I think when you work together as one, you know, that's when you can really start to achieve a sort of a more consistent and coherent voice. But also it's sort of almost like the way to of the thing works, because everybody is all combining and heading in the same direction. But I think for Ngāti Pāua, it has been a really difficult thing to see this area of water. And the people that have come back from Ngāti Pāua have really formed a bond with it. And the Ngāti Pāua that are living on the beach right now, you know, that occupation has been going since March the 8th or 9th, I always forget which exact day it started, non-stop. So those people have really, you know, formed a bond with their ancestral waters. And that at least is one really good thing to come out of it, because I think a lot of Ngāti Pāua think Waiheke is a place for rich people, you know, because basically they lost every bit of land that they had virtually. You know, they had no place to go back to. And I think the one good thing to come out of this is probably that those Ngāti Pāua feel the links with the land, and also they're relearning the stories and the histories of the place, and, you know, recognising landmarks, getting kaimoana, all of that sort of stuff, which was their right from way back in history. And as for Protect Putiki, I really admire the protectors. Here's me, an old fire up north looking. But I really have to thank them for their kaha in choosing to do what they did, and for putting themselves on the line, you know, getting criminal charges. But their belief was that it was wrong for the environment and wrong for Māori as well. So good on them.
That was Trishul speaking to Protect Putiki.
That was a 95BFM podcast. To hear more, head to 95BFM.com/bcasts.